This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. It's Monday. I know Mondays sometimes are slow, but we've got a lot to cover in the next hour, so if you're not buckled up, you better do so. Coming up, Oklahoma Senator Jim Inhofe is here to talk about President Trump's historic trip to Saudi Arabia and Israel. We'll also get his take on the EPA and the Department of Interior moving quickly to eliminate Obama-era advisors. We're going to talk with him about that and much more. Also, former CIA Director James Woolsey will weigh in on the president's Middle East trip and talk about recent revelations of a potential intelligence breach that led to China executing American intelligence assets in that country. And what does that mean to national security? And in what was sure to make the anti-religious activist head spin, the two top elected officials in Texas were in the pulpit of Grace Community Church outside of Houston, Texas, preaching on moral issues yesterday. And then, at the conclusion of the service, they signed a measure that protects the sermons of pastors from being subpoenaed by folks like the rogue, former rogue mayor of Houston, Anise Parker, back in 2014. Anyway, the founding senior pastor of Grace Community Church, my good friend Steve Riggle, is here with the details a little bit later. And new evidence suggests the social media giants are biased in what is filtered or not filtered. True or false? Well, Tim Graham, director of media analysis for the Media Research Center, is here with the answer. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you miss anything on your way home, if you got to stop and get gas, get bread, get milk, well, you can find it all later, archived at TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, President Trump is in Israel today, the second stop of his first foreign trip. The president flew into the Jewish state from Saudi Arabia, a first ever direct flight between the two countries. Back here in Washington, D.C., President Trump's budget plan is set to be unveiled tomorrow, and conservative lawmakers are working hard to undo years of destructive Obama policies. Joining us now is Jim Inhofe, Senator of Oklahoma. He's the chairman of the Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works and one of my favorite senators. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, it's good to be with you, Tony.
Well, let me get your take first on the president's trip to Saudi Arabia and to Israel. It's a new day, is it not?
Oh, my gosh. You know, I just did a thing, a TV thing from some Israel station a few minutes ago. And I said, just remember 8 years ago what happened when we started this policy of appeasement with the Obama administration coming in. And it's the first and only time since the independence of Israel in 1948 that we've had a president of the United States who has trashed Israel. And that's what happened, and we just got off of that. And so the reason I'm very proud of Trump, he didn't waste any time. In his first foreign trip, you know, he's going over to that part of the world, and he is making sure everybody understands that all these things that we've been living with under the administration, Obama administration, you know, he's the guy that went over to Cairo and told them over there that the Palestinians endured daily humiliation. All these things, they talked about the pro-Hamas ceasefire. And you remember when you and I talked right after Netanyahu came to and spoke to a joint session of the legislature here in Washington, mm-hmm. and I made the comment at that time, if he changes residence, he'd be my candidate for president
Absolutely.
Of the United States. Well, here's a guy that is, when he was over here, our president at that time, Obama, refused to meet with him. So this is a whole new day, and it's overdue, and I'm so excited about the reception that he's getting over there. They all came out, and I'm very excited about it.
I mean, it is a new day. The apology tour has ended. America is back leading from the front, not from behind, as we saw with the previous administration. But to your point, I think President Trump is literally taking the bull by the horns with his first foreign policy trip going to one of the most troubled places in the entire world right now.
Yeah. You know, one thing I like to remind people, because it's awful hard to people keep up with this stuff when they're out working and paying for all this stuff that's going on here. But it's a different world than it used to be. And I can remember when people would sit around and worry about the Cold War. Well, that was nothing compared to the threat that's facing us right now. And when I happened to be with Netanyahu a very short while ago, and he says, you know, it's shocking how the American people have forgotten, number one, what happened on 9/11, and number two, how much more dangerous that is today because of the fact that people, you know, like in North Korea, a guy who's mentally deranged is rapidly getting the equipment, the bomb, as well as the delivery system that can reach the United States of America. And so these threats are there. And Netanyahu said, you know, we've been living with this for a long time. We always knew when we let our wives off to go shopping or to go to a coffee house, we know that something tragic can happen. And America seems to have forgotten that they are vulnerable too now. And so I think that's the reminder that we have to, and this president understands that. Obama didn't, but this president does. And he's going to show and demonstrate very clearly that if we've got one friend we can always depend on, it's Israel.
And he made that very clear over there this morning. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Monday afternoon. Oklahoma Senator Jim Inhofe, my guest. We're discussing the president's trip to Israel, but I want to transition now because it's a new day domestically as well, Senator. One of the things that you have been focused on like a laser as the chairman of the Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works is what the EPA has done to really choke down our economy with regulations. New budget coming out tomorrow, scaling back, trying to balance the budget, make government work for people. But many of the department heads are not waiting for the budget. They've been moving very quickly, like the Department of Interior and the EPA, working to eliminate some of these Obama-era holdovers in terms of these advisory committees.
Yeah, you know, Tony, I chaired that committee for the longest Republican rules will allow you to chair a committee 12 years. So I was the chairman of the committee all the 8 years that Obama was putting the overregulations on America. And that's what's been killing jobs. You know, if you talk to the farmers, whether the farmers in Oklahoma or anywhere, they'll tell you that of all the problems that they have, the biggest problem was the water regulation that the president tried to put through. And that would take the jurisdiction away of water away from the states and give it to the federal government. Well, that was their number one concern. And that's just one of 47 regulations this president has been able to stop. And I'm going to ask, since most people are not aware of it, some of the regulations really do affect the listeners who are listening to us right now. How many people out there knew that he had a regulation that would establish a national school board, you know, to take care of the schools because we've outgrown local supportive schools? Things like that. We have a list of 47 of regulations. Now, if you don't mind, my email, what do you call that? Is that the email?
Your website.
Website. All right, I have to get my grandkids know all about this new stuff, but I don't. Anyway, my website is inhofe.senate.gov. And if they go to that, I list all of the regulations, and there are 47 of them that this president has successfully been able to stop. There are two ways of doing it, either with an executive order or with the Congressional Review Act. And it's just so significant. People don't realize this guy, I don't know when he sleeps. This guy is just busy all the time. And it'll be a real eye-opener when they get this list and read and see what he has done. So I'm very excited about the over-regulation. This is something that he made this commitment back before he was elected president. And he's doing exactly what he said he'd do.
And that is in itself refreshing that he's actually doing what he said he was going to do. Hadn't dialed it back, has it moderated. He's just doing what he said he was going to do. And that's why I believe people supported him then and why they continue to support him now. I want to continue to focus on the EPA because that has long been a problem for our economy, for conservatives, for businesses. Mm-hmm. The new administrator, Scott Pruitt, former Attorney General of the state of Oklahoma, someone you're familiar with, someone I'm familiar with, a great guy. I was with him on Friday. He's bringing in fresh advisors. They have these advisors to the EPA. Their terms ended. He's not holding them over because they were appointed by Barack Obama. I applaud that move. How is that going to impact the EPA?
Well, first of all, you may not be aware of it, but Scott Pruitt, I actually flew him around western Oklahoma in my plane when he was in his first elective office because they didn't know him out there. So we are very, very close. And people would say, how does Scott Pruitt, what qualifies him to be director of the EPA? And I said, the answer is simple. He is, as Attorney General of Oklahoma, he has sued the EPA more than anybody else has, and that's what qualifies him for it. To get rid of all these people and start concentrating on clean air, clean water, and those things. The problem he has right now, if you go up there to see him, he'll show you a room with a long table in it, and they meet historically and currently every Monday morning. And the problem he has is most of them around there don't like him, you know. And so we're not able, with the Democrats slow rolling all of our confirmations, we are not able to get the good people in. It's going to happen, but it hasn't happened yet. So we're jumping on these over-regulations right now, but it's very, very difficult. You might remember Ryan Jackson, who was my chief of staff for many, many years in my office here. He's now the chief of staff for Pruitt, and he'll tell you that it's really heavy lifting, because they don't have their friends in there yet, and they can't get them in so long as they're so slow rolling the confirmations. So that's the biggest problem they have. But all the things he can do through executive actions and through the Congressional Review Act, you're not aware of this, I don't think, but I made a commitment 8 years ago that so long as Obama was in the White House, I would not step foot in the White House. Well, I thought it was going to be 4 years, and it ended up being 8 years. And as luck would have it, the week that this new president came in, he signed, the first bill he signed was my bill. And so we had a signing ceremony, and that was just so refreshing to do that. And it officially ended the war on fossil fuels. That's coal, oil, and gas. And so we're now going to get America back into generating electricity, generating power, and hopefully pulling all of our allies over there in the area of the old Soviet Union away from Russia and Iran and start buying their natural gas and their gas and oil from the United States, all because of that one appointment that the president made in Scott Pruitt.
Well, it certainly is a new day. And, Senator, I want to thank you for taking time out of a busy schedule to join us to take a look at the president's trip, as well as new domestic policies on the way in the Department of Environmental Protection.
A whole new era. Thank you.
Always great.
Do the Lord's work as usual, Tony.
All right. Always great to talk with you, Senator Inhofe. To find out more, go to my website, and I've got a link to the senator's website, and you can see the list of all the things he has on there. All right, folks, a lot more Washington Watch to come. Former CIA Director James Woolsey is with us next to talk about China killing off American security and intelligence assets in that country. Major breach. How did it happen? We're going to talk with him about that when we return here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. We're back with more right after this.
Girls having privacy in school showers, locker rooms, and bathrooms is a no-brainer, right? Not everybody thinks so. Fairfax County, Virginia has become ground zero in the efforts to impose transgender ideology on American school children. The school system there is one of the largest in the United States, and its close proximity to Washington, D.C. has made it a target for the efforts to mainstream this radical ideology. Even after the Trump administration revoked Obama's directive threatening the nation's public schools, the fight continues at the state and district level. But parents and concerned citizens can fight back. In a recent panel discussion, three different perspectives from a school board member, a concerned parent, and an attorney are presented. They expose the tactics used by the transgender lobbyists and explore the strategies parents and taxpayers can use to fight back. Discover how to implement a 5-point plan to educate, explain, engage, empower, and elect in order to combat the transgender ideology in public schools. Visit frc.org/events to view this vital discussion.
This is Barry McGuire. I'm a car guy, and I love to lead people to Jesus Christ as a layman outside the walls of the church. If sharing your faith is not the priority of your life, you have no idea how much fun it is to live in the favor of God, where all of His promises are poured out in abundance, from health for your body to direction for your steps to making everything that happens in your life work for good. It's the end of worry when you know, even in the worst of times, that God is using you to bring people to Him. Your light shines brighter and your testimony more powerful when you're living for His purpose to reach the lost in all seasons of your life. Without faith, it's impossible to please God. But with your faith, you give Him joy, and the joy of the Lord becomes your strength. How can you resist this opportunity? Your job is to ignite revival outside the walls of your church by moving everybody you're with today closer to Jesus. If you want to know how easy that is, go to ROTW.com.
You get the soil ready.
You put the seeds in and then you water it.
How do you plant a garden?
I don't know.
You pray that God will give you a good harvest.
Then you have to work it to get all the weeds away.
And then God brings the plants.
Planting a garden takes planning, hard work, and God's blessing. So does creating a lasting legacy for the people and charities that mean the most to you. The AFA Foundation is here to help you sow the financial seeds God has blessed you with in order for them to blossom for generations to come. We do this by offering free consultation and assistance in the areas of charitable gift annuities, estate planning, will and trust planning, and bequests. To learn more, call 800-326-4543, extension 345, 800-326-4543, extension 345, or visit afafoundation.net.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Monday afternoon. The website, tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at tperkins. All right, the New York Times reports that a crackdown on espionage in China resulted in the death or imprisonment of about 20 people spying for the United States starting back in 2010. The Chinese government systematically dismantled CIA spying operations in the country, crippled intelligence gathering there. And what does this mean for us going forward, considering the threat from China? Joining us now is James Woolsey, National Security and Energy Specialist and former director of the Central Intelligence Agency. Mr. Woolsey, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Good to be with you.
First, I want to get your take on President Donald Trump's visit to the Middle East, a historic trip, going to Saudi Arabia, flying directly from there to Israel. What are your thoughts on how the president is doing in going to the Middle East, one of the hot spots in the world today?
Well, I think he's doing fine, and I think the trip is having a very positive effect, particularly in the area of staking out the position that we're following the Obama administration's path with respect to Iran, he is standing very firmly against Iran and all of its terrorism and its search for a nuclear weapon. And I think that has been the principal issue. Now, of course, in terms of public attention and perhaps drawing some attention away from some of the domestic issues that plagued him, that might be relevant. But I think the most important thing is the Iranian shift.
And the world's watching. I mean, when he's going over there making such strong, clear statements of support for Israel and challenging the Saudis to be a part of policing these Islamic terrorists, I mean, I think the world is listening.
Yes, I do too. And it's that was a good speech, dramatically good speech that he gave. And he handled that well. And, so far, so good. I live in fear that he may at any point might veer off on a tweet, but so far that hasn't occurred, and good.
Yeah, well, that's right. He's in a no-tweet zone.
Maybe right.
Let's talk about this New York Times story revealing something that's been out there in the intelligence community. It began back in 2010, where the Chinese have imprisoned or executed U.S. assets for intelligence there in that country. Current and former American officials describe the intelligence breach as one of the worst in decades. You agree?
I don't know. I'm not in the details of that sort of thing anymore. But typically there are two kinds of officers, intelligence officers on duty, recruiting assets and so forth in another country. One are under official cover, and therefore their cover is that they are, let's say, another government official or with some non-government operation, but they at least have some kind of protection of in that that's very important. Then there's some there are people called NOCs, non-official cover officers, who are not pretending to be, let's say, an official of another branch of government in Washington, but rather pretending to be somebody completely different nationality, an occupation that has nothing to do with the government, etc. And those are the people who are under real danger in case there is a leak and a crackdown, because they are not treated like the official cover people. They are not just expelled from the country. They may be, as was the case apparently with some of these people, they may be either imprisoned or killed. Typically, more are imprisoned and then traded for someone in the future. And apparently what's different about this Chinese move, at least as far as one can tell from the press reports, is that a number of them were killed, and that's really extremely unfortunate, to put it mildly.
Now, according to the press reports, Mr. Woolsey, there is suggestion that either there was a mole within the intelligence community that released this information exposing these assets, or the Chinese have hacked the covert system that the CIA used to communicate with foreign sources. So, you know, what? Any idea what we're to believe here happened?
No, I mean, those are two reasonable possibilities. I don't know. We caught Aldridge Ames on my watch, who we had known for close to a year, was likely to be the mole in the CIA, and then we looked for another one because some of the material that had been obtained by the Russians clearly came from someone other than Ames. So we knew there was another mole. The FBI thought it was somebody in the CIA. The people at the CIA weren't sure, but were willing to look anywhere. And eventually it turned out not to be someone in the CIA. It turned out to be Hansen, who was an FBI agent. It was the other mole. Ames and Hansen spend the rest of their lives in prison, and they got, both of them got people killed by their disclosures. So that's sometimes the way it goes, and then sometimes for perhaps a lesser offense, someone will be incarcerated, but then later, as I said, traded for someone on the other side.
So it can be a real challenge trying to trace down these leaks, moles, whatever you may call them. It it may take some time to find out the source.
Yep, it's tough. But counterintelligence is a very demanding and tough business. People who caught Ames, Gene Verdafe and others, they wrote a book about the search for Aldridge Ames, which is really worth people reading.
Well, Mr. Woolsey, thanks so much for taking some time out to joining us this afternoon.
Sure. Good to be with you.
All right, folks. Jim Woolsey, former director of the CIA. All right, to find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Coming up next, during a worship service at Grace Community Church in the Woodlands outside of Houston, Texas, yesterday, Texas Governor Greg Abbott signed a piece of legislation into law. What was it? Why did he do it? We're going to talk about it next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. We're back with a whole lot more right after this.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, it looks like the markets are looking for the next catalyst that is going to move it forward and continuing to look a little bit positive. They're looking, of course, at politics, and it looks like the political environment, there might be some very small pickings for them to get through on the negative side, and it looks like things are mostly positive. But we'll wait and see what that catalyst might be. Some of it could be some economic reporting that has been out, and it looks like that American consumers are consuming at a very rapid pace. We are seeing hiring moving very rapidly, dwindling unemployment, rising wages, and all of that is helping to improve the standard of living of millions of households. So that is very good news. And of course, this is enabling consumers to buy more cars, houses, and big ticket items. So durable good numbers are looking pretty good. Listen to this. The number of people that are collecting unemployment checks has fallen to a 29-year low. A 29-year low. That is amazing. More and more companies are now complaining that they can't find enough skilled workers. And that is a problem, folks, that has been unheard of for a lot of years. So that is very, very good news. Hence the reason why the Federal Reserve is going to stay on course of raising interest rates. So very good news coming out this week along a lot of fronts. And I think this is going to be very beneficial to catapult the markets to continue to move forward as we see underlying fundamentals of the economy looking better and better.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Monday afternoon. As I said, a lot happening. Busy weekend, rolling into a busy week. It was a busy day in Texas yesterday, and a triumph for religious liberty in the Lone Star State. The governor, Governor Greg Abbott, while surrounded by the Houston Five pastors, those are the pastors who had their sermons subpoenaed by the former mayor of Houston back in 2012, Governor Greg Abbott signed into law SB 24, the Sermon Protection Bill, at Grace Church in the Woodlands, Texas. That's north of Houston. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick was at the event as well. Both actually delivered messages during the worship service and then signed the bill there surrounded by the pastors. Now, I have to think that those anti-religious, anti-Christian activists, those humanist, atheist organizations, that collectively their heads had to be spinning. I mean, the whole always argument about separation church and state. Here you had the two top elected officials of the state of Texas preaching a message on moral issues and then signing a law into effect. The measure, effective immediately, prohibits a government entity from issuing a subpoena for a religious sermon and compelling a pastor or religious leader to testify regarding their sermon. Joining us now is Pastor Steve Riggle. He is the founding senior pastor of Grace Community Church. Pastor Steve, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
Well, I have to say, that was a pretty big day yesterday there at church.
Yeah, it was, in a couple of ways, it was historic. The governor said he didn't think there had been a bill ever signed into law in the middle of a church service at a church. And then if you think about, I mentioned to the congregation, I said, you know, if you just think about history during the founding era and the accurate history, not the made-up one that's being kind of taught today, it wouldn't be hard to imagine. It wouldn't be about a sermon bill, but it could be something that top officials in a state government were bringing the message, and they might even be the pastors on that day. And so that's kind of what happened yesterday. As you said, the governor and lieutenant governor, they preached the sermon.
I have to say, I think it's amazing. I was trying to, you know, think back on the top of my head if I could recall such an occasion where a piece of legislation was signed into law in the middle of a church service. I can't remember it of anything like that in modern time. But I want to say this is a testament to your persistence in leadership there in Houston, Texas. Would we go back to what Mayor Parker, former Mayor Parker, did by issuing subpoenas for the sermons of these pastors? You stood up, you led, in part, led the coalition to challenge that. It led to the city voting and the voters overwhelmingly rejecting the strong-arm, intimidating tactics of the mayor. And there had to be, for your congregation and for the community, just a day of celebration.
It was. It was something we didn't anticipate happening. But when the governor's office called and said the governor would like to come and sign the ceremony actually in a service, I thought, what a fitting end to this battle that we fought in Houston and with all of the pastors across the city who of every race and age and denomination and stood together and continued to stand together. So it was a great day for that.
Now, Pastor Steve Riggle, some would say, well, we've got the First Amendment. Why do we need, a measure like the Sermon Protection Bill?
Well, boy, that's a good question. I brought that up yesterday myself. I said, who would have thought that you'd ever have to have a day when there was this kind of legislation? But then who would have thought when we saw the word men on a restroom door and women on another one, that we would have to go and try to define who that meant that could go in there. It's just a crazy day that we're living in, and so these kinds of things become necessary.
You know, this is somewhat of a rhetorical question because you and I have talked about it, but this has been a wake-up call for pastors, especially in Houston, that what seemed to be normal common sense, taking preaching on issues of moral concern from the pulpit, that's something we've taken for granted in the past, and it's not something that we should take for granted any longer.
That's absolutely right. And, not only, Tony, was your voice and that of FRC, pastors across the nation to begin to lift their voice with courage and speak out and speak up, because with what you guys are doing and trying to get pastors to do that, it is absolutely critical right now, in my judgment, for the pastoral voice to be prophetic. By that I mean they just stand up, speak up and speak out, and if they will, the people are looking for that kind of leadership.
Yeah, without question, and you provided it. I again congratulate you, commend you, and thank you, Pastor Steve Riggle, for being one of those pastors that are standing.
Well, thank you, Tony, for all you guys did.
All right, folks, find out more. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. You can do the same thing in your state, Pastor. If you're willing to be bold, courageous, and lead, you can do it as well. All right, coming up next, don't look now, Facebook and Google, but your bias is showing. Tim Graham, Media Research Center's Director of Media Analysis, is here after the break. Don't go away.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms, in association with American Family Studios, introduces Ryan DeFrades, Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrades. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetheart!
sweetie.
She's an agent. Get her, boys.
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Order yours today at ryansecretagent.com.
Join Frank Turek, Richard Land, Norman Geisler, Greg Kokel, and others for Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Enjoy informative talks, a live debate, and a dialogue with Ken Ham from Answers in Genesis. Plus, there's the premiere of the American Family Association documentary, The God Who Speaks. Early bird pricing ends August 1st. Visit ses.edu for details.
Is God calling you to pursue theological graduate education? What's keeping you from taking the first step? Is it time? What if you could choose from flexible class options? Is it money? What if competitively priced seminary offered academic scholarships? Do you think you're alone? What if your classmates were just like you, balancing careers and families with seminary? Hello, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. Take the first step. Visit wbs.edu.
This is A Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Discernment, being able to know the difference between the holy and the profane. One of my favorite verses goes like this. Test all things, hold fast to what is good, abstain from all forms of evil. Discernment, or rather the lack of discernment, has become so obvious today, hasn't it? In a world of relativism, what is right in your eyes may not be right for someone else. What is pornographic, they say, may be art to another. However, truth isn't relative. There is right and wrong. There is good and evil. Yet even many who claim to be Christians don't know the difference. According to a Gallup poll, only 24% of Americans even believe that the Bible is the actual Word of God. How can you and I know the difference between the holy and profane? By spending time with God in His Word and in prayer daily. This is A Decency Minute. Find out more by visiting us on the web at americandecency.org. I'm Bill Johnson.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. By the way, I've been talking about our pastors' conference. That's coming up this week. Pastors from across the nation will be converging on Washington, D.C. for our annual Watchman on the Wall Pastors' Conference. Stay tuned for more details if you're a pastor and can't be here. Might have a way for you to catch some of the great stuff that's going to be happening. Anyway, the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, for some time now, social media giant Facebook has been exposed, I know this will come as a surprise, for having a liberal bias, blocking conservative pages and posts. And recently, with the passing of former chairman and CEO of Fox News, Roger Ailes, and a simple Google search on him, you'll find that the top results consist almost entirely of articles from several liberal publications savaging his reputation as a person. Now, given all the accolades that have been out there, and this probably the most influential person of the 20th century when it came to shaping the media, and if you do a search, all you can find are negative stories, something doesn't add up. Joining us now is Tim Graham, Director of Media Analysis for the Media Research Center. Tim, thanks so much for joining us.
Sure.
Now, look, as I was talking about, you last week, Fox News CEO Roger Ailes, former Fox News CEO Roger Ailes, died. His death once again exposes a significant bias with Google. True or untrue?
It certainly seems true in this case. And the top result was this awful Rolling Stone article by Matt Taibbi, which you wouldn't really call an obituary. It's more like a long episode of hate speech. Obviously, Roger Ailes left Fox News under a sexual harassment scandal, and there were a lot of payouts, and so you would one would assume that there was a real problem there. And yet, obviously, the average conservative looks at this and says, when the time comes many years from now and Bill Clinton dies, will sexual harassment be in the headline?
Right. Right. It's
will
not,
sexual it, harassment be the main subject?
Right. It's not a matter of glossing over the issues that existed there, but it's the fact that that's what the stories were about, not the fact that he changed media in this country.
There were several nice or at least fair and balanced pieces on his record. The Mark Fisher in the Washington Post had one on the front page. But there was a lot of mean-spirited things. I mean, Taibbi was basically not just running down Ailes, but running down how stupid America is and how Ailes made America even dumber. And that's one of those things where you just wonder to yourself, who's reading these people?
Mm-hmm.
And who is Rolling Stone magazine to talk about somebody else being a blight on the media landscape? They're the ones putting out fake news stories about rapes in Virginia.
So, Tim, how does this happen? How is it that when you go to Google, you do a search, you get these stories that, as you point out, probably no one's really reading, and it certainly is skewed in a liberal, from a liberal perspective?
It's a good question. I'm not a Google engineer, but I think part of it might be that I certainly wrote about this Matt Taibbi piece. It's something that if it's something that's shared enough, that might have something to do with it. But you do have to also suspect, you know, the Google Doodle today is praising some radical Native American activist that nobody's ever heard of. You know, they couldn't celebrate the birthday of Ronald Reagan, but they can celebrate a radical Indian activist nobody's ever heard of. And that's sort of the Google, you know, they were big Obama people.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is the sort of thing, yes, where you when you see a search result like this, you begin to wonder, yeah, how political is the software?
My guest, Tim Graham, Media Research Center's Director of Media Analysis. But Google's not the only one. What are we learning about the role and ethics of the social media giant Facebook?
Well, Facebook's been having a lot of trouble with moderating comments. I mean, it's an enormous job, but I know that, yeah, there's this story in the Guardian in the United Kingdom that's basically suggesting, you know, Facebook just can't control its content. And so what you're having now is all sorts of things are breaking through, you know, videos of violent death, remarks about shooting the president. You know, they just can't keep up with it. So, I mean, I think this is one of those things that anybody who's on Facebook, most of us are like sharing pictures of our kids.
right.
But it can get very nasty very quickly. In politics and on some of these social issues.
But are we seeing a trend toward them kind of censoring conservative speech or particular viewpoints? Is it truly a public space where people can bring forth their views, or are we seeing there, even with Facebook, kind of a slanted approach?
Our concern there is about their declaration of what is fake news and who they're using to evaluate what news is fake or not. What they tend to do is they don't take down posts, but they will put a flag on it and say, criticized by PolitiFact. Well, PolitiFact is a very slanted, so-called fact-checking outlet. And that's the kind of thing where you get really concerned because their standards of evaluation are very politicized. So, I mean, I wouldn't trust anybody saying PolitiFact put a flag on this story as fake, or Snopes.com, which has become very politicized.
Right.
So, yeah, now people have to be aware. You have to make them aware of the so-called fact checkers.
Yeah, I mean, I warn people all the time, you know, be very, very careful of what you read on the internet, you know, what you get off Facebook. Don't take all that stuff for face value. But personally, Tim, my preference would be for people to be their own judge, as opposed to having these liberal, left-leaning arbiters that are moderators that are out there telling us what can be and what cannot be posted and what's true and what's not, because I don't trust their judgment.
Yeah, I think this is what the whole fight about liberal media bias has always been about, and that is that they would like to say that everything they're reporting is facts, but it's heavily, heavily marinated in opinion. And which facts they choose to highlight and which facts they find inconvenient, that so-called news judgment often is very much pitched toward, hey, what do we want to highlight today? So, for example, today it would be protests against Vice President Pence at Notre Dame. Hey, let's all pay attention to that.
So what do you say at the Media Research Center, what do you say to folks when it comes to their consumption and use of social media? How should they approach it?
Well, you have to say first, the problem begins with us. Are we civil, and are we telling the truth? Are we making sure that what we share is accurate?
Right.
And then you do want to dig deep when you see something. Dig deep and make sure it's true. And don't spread stuff that's just not true.
I agree 100%. Tim Graham, thanks so much for joining us today. Always great to talk with you.
Thanks.
All right, folks, to find out more about the great work that the Media Research Center does, go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right, he mentioned the vice president's speech at Notre Dame this weekend. I was actually with the president, vice president, on Friday. Spoke at another event that I was presiding over, and I introduced the vice president. He spoke. We had some time to visit. And from there, he left to head up to a speech, actually, in, I think, Pennsylvania, and then on to Notre Dame. You may have seen some of this. There was some people, students led by the LGBT activists that walked out after the president was introduced. Vice President. And once again, we see all that talk about tolerance is just that, talk. Vice President of the United States, commencement speaker. But I tell you, he handled the situation, I think, with the kind of poise that people have come to expect from him. In fact, he used the opportunity to point back to the problem. Political correctness on college campuses. And by the way, if you didn't see the speech, I've got a link at TonyPerkins.com, and you can follow the link over to the speech that he gave. In part, this is what he said. Quote, "This university is a vanguard of freedom of expression and the free exchange of ideas at a time, sadly, when free speech and civility are waning on campuses across America. I would submit that the increasing intolerance and suppression of the time-honored tradition of free expression on our campuses jeopardizes the liberty of every American," end quote. I wholeheartedly agree. I commend the vice president for taking this message to the college campus there at Notre Dame and right there in the presence of about, I don't know, I think estimates were there were 100 students that walked out, led again by the LGBTQXYZ students with their rainbow colors. But there were about 3,000 who stayed and listened respectfully, celebrating the great achievements that were made by those students. And I mean, this is let me just say this. I'm a little concerned, disappointed, and you know, Notre Dame is a religious institution. I know it's like many, it's drifted, but it's a sad commentary on the church's compromise on the cultural issues of our day. I mean, this is a religious institution that was once rooted in biblical morality. And like a number of faith-based institutions, churches, they've surrendered important ground on the question of sexuality because it, well, quite frankly, because of the adversaries or the advocates of redefining human sexuality are vicious and in often cases vile. And so people want to avoid that conflict and that controversy. Well, let me tell you what. For those that surrender on this, history tells us that's just a harbinger of future moral compromise. I think it's important that our institutions of higher learning, yes, they have, you know, dissenting thought. I understand that. But they need to protect free speech, the speech of those who continue to hold to a biblical and historical view of human sexuality. That's the one that's being suppressed. And all of this talk about tolerance, 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 where is it? Certainly not coming from the crowd on the left. Not at all. Anyway, if you'd like to see the vice president's speech, go to tonyperkins.com. You can follow the links over. And I'll have to say, I think, you know, the president, President Trump, understands the power of force multiplication, because he's not alone in his quest to turn America around. He's assembled a pretty impressive team. And I think the vice president is, of course, that was his first pick, but he's doing a great job. I mentioned earlier, Scott Pruitt was with him on Friday. Tom Price over at Health and Human Services doing a great job there, and one of the biggest departments and one of the greatest offenders, that department, of traditional values. And he's there now and got actually a few former FRCers there on his team. So I'm looking for good things to happen from some of these government agencies now. Not that I'm looking for them to do anything. I'm looking for them to stop doing stuff, stop doing the bad stuff. So we'll continue to encourage them, and hopefully where necessary. And there will be times, folks, that we're going to need you to respond to help us push and prod. And I've had a number of these conversations. Look, we've got some really good people in these different positions, from the White House all the way down to throughout every agency. But remember, that's just a handful of people, relatively speaking, that are coming in this administration. All these other people have been there. And it's going to require inside-outside efforts. They're working on the inside, but how they get a lot of this done is through outside pressure, meaning the public cares about it, and they speak up about it. And when it's not right, they do something about it. And it's like today in my update. If you don't get my daily update, you can sign up for it at tonyperkins.com. But another... federal grant from the National Science Foundation, over $200,000 to the University of Georgia to study microaggression. That's crazy. We need to stop that kind of stuff. And when it happens, we need to raise the red flags and encourage our friends and allies on the inside to put an end to all this nonsense that's been going on for 8 years and longer in some cases. All right, out of time, folks. Thank you so much for being with us today. Again, I encourage you to visit the website, tonyperkins.com. And until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians chapter 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.